graduates should share in the costs of their degree. I'm choosing my words carefully. Graduates should share, not students. Students are broke. But there are three reasons why graduates should share. First of all, higher education has major social benefits, but it also has major private benefits. And therefore, it is both efficient and fair that the beneficiaries should pay some of the costs. A second reason for cost sharing is countries can't afford to pay for the costs of a mass high-quality higher education system. That was true long before the economic crisis. It will remain true. So that's one lesson from economic theory. The second lesson is that well-designed student loans have core characteristics of which having income contingent repayments is a crucial one. There are other lessons from economic theory, but I will keep moving to the third argument, which is it's prior attainment stupid. There's something that I refer to as pub economics. Pub economics refers to something that's obviously right, and everyone knows it's right. It's wrong. And it is pub economics to argue that tuition fees harm access. What the evidence shows is that access is a huge problem. It's a 0 to 18 problem, much more than it's an 18 plus problem. And if I could ask you to look at slide 6 on the handout, I want to talk a bit about that. The top histogram shows participation by students who have the very best A-level grades. And it shows that 97% of them go to university. The second bar shows students with good but not quite such good A-level grades, and there the participation rate is about 90%. So what this diagram shows is the better your A-level grades, the more likely you are to go to university, which is deeply boring and obvious. But if you now look, you've got on each of them a light grey bit and a dark grey bit. Light grey, top three socioeconomic groups. Dark grey, bottom three socioeconomic groups. What this says is, if you control for prior attainment, the socioeconomic gradient largely disappears. Or in policy terms, what it says is, if you can get them to decent A levels, you've cracked it. So what you should be spending money on is 0 to 18 rather than 18 plus. Now, my fourth argument is that the evidence supports the theory. The 2006 reforms in England got that broadly right. If you look at slide 10, which has got some tiny numbers on it, the 2006 strategy introduced variable fees, fully covered by income contingent loans, and with a whole range of previously introduced policies earlier in the system. Literacy hour, numeracy hour, education maintenance allowances, aim higher, etc. So fees went up, but if you look at the bottom line of slide 12, participation improved dramatically. The percentage of applicants from the most disadvantaged backgrounds applying to university rose from 12% in 2006 to 18.5% in 2011-12. There's other bits of evidence on that table, more money for universities, etc. But the key point that I want to make is that because of the package of tuition fees supported by stuff earlier in the system, what you got in England was a dramatic improvement in participation. And to conclude, this isn't just an exercise in logic chopping. The arguments about the determinants of participation are important. Free is just another word for some other sucker pays. And if you ask who goes to university and who pays, it's a sorry story. So the policy that spends money on free higher education instead of improving earlier education is spending money largely on the wrong thing. We should be spending money instead on people who leave school without any qualifications. So my bottom line is, it's right to discuss where to set the fees cap, but opposing fees in general is fighting the wrong battle. Final point, I think this is an area where the economics is dead easy. It's the politics that's horribly hard. So I wish you well in what is a very important debate. Thank you very much.
Terrific, thank you. So from a bold English kit to the very antithesis of that description. Simon Thomas is one of the rare breed of people who've been both an MP, an Assembly member, and a senior special advisor working at the heart of the Welsh Government. So he brings a rich perspective to this debate, and now is Plaid Cymru's education spokesperson, and I invite Simon.
Thank you, Lee. All those things, but also bored. Thank you for the opportunity to take part in this very timely debate, and thank you, IWA and Aberystwyth University, for ensuring that it takes place. Now, it's very timely because only today we had the Institute for Fiscal Studies and the Sutton Trust study showing that the majority of undergraduates now at university will still be paying off their student loans well into their 40s and even 50s, with three quarters of them being unable to clear their debt even after 30 years. This study also confirmed the size of student debt, now averaging at £44,000 of debt. So that's about £2,500 per annum of debt servicing, which graduates will have to find in a currently depressed job market for everyone. There is, of course, perhaps a perverse incentive into not improving your job prospects to the degree by which you will start to repay quite heavily. Now, this study only adds to the Westminster Government's own most recent assessment that the tuition fee loan system is fast approaching the point at which the policy of tripling tuition fees to £9,000 will bring no return whatsoever to the Treasury. The write-off figure is rapidly approaching the 46.8% mark, estimated by economists to be the threshold at which the government will actually start to lose money it would have saved by keeping the old tuition fee system. The official forecast, confirmed by David Willett, is now at 45% of the £10 billion of student loans made available each year. In 2010, before the introduction of the tripling of fees, the estimate was 28%. This means that currently the government expects £90 billion of an overall sum of £200 billion of student loans to remain unpaid by 2042. In this crazy, distorted view of the true value of higher education, the proposal to lift the current cap on tuition fees would be, in the words of David Bowie, like putting out fire with gasoline. Let me state clearly that I and Plaid Cymru still adhere to the principle of free tuition at undergraduate level. We believe that this can and should be an investment for all of us for the future of the nation. I think I'm correct in saying that the NUS is also now considering that the introduction of tuition fees has been a failed experiment. The Liberal Democrats, who opposed tuition fees in principle in the 2004, at the time that the legislation went through Parliament, and indeed continued to oppose it until the time that over half their MPs became coalition government ministers, have now abandoned any pretence here in Wales of supporting free tuition. To me, this is another example of what David Marquand called recently in The New Statesman, whoring after the false gods of Orange Book market fundamentalism. To be fair, it's not just the Liberal Democrats that do that. The HE sector as a whole and many elements in other parties have also worshipped at the same altar. This pattern of vacillation by various groups and parties shows why it is vital to have a cool, long, hard look at funding for higher education. I called for such a cross-party examination last summer, so I was pleased when the Diamond Review was established. I've had to fight to ensure it did break over the period of the next Assembly elections so that all political parties would have to state their principles and views to the electorate, and so the Welsh Government could not hide behind yet another review and refuse to set out its stall. Having secured that agreement, Plaid Cymru will now work with the Diamond Review and all other parties to try and agree a way forward. Now, I do recognise that in the current constitutional arrangements and in the cross-border flow of students, Wales cannot have a tuition fee-free system. We have, in our own consultation on this, estimated that the cost would be an extra £336 million per annum. And quite frankly, Wales can't afford that. So the practical question is how we use the resources we have to both cushion the impact of tuition fees for students as a whole, how any system promotes social justice and equal access, how we ensure adequate funding for HE institutions in Wales, including for high-cost courses and research, and how we build in values and principles of public investment and public money. It's curious to me that when this was introduced, and I was a Member of Parliament, most Vice-Chancellors in Wales at the time opposed the introduction of tuition fees. I know that's not the case now, but it was the case 10 years ago. And Vice-Chancellors have certainly not complained less to me over those 10 years about the access to funding that they have. Indeed, they claim that they have less funding than they had then. So in doing this, I think we have to be clear about some things. Firstly, student loans are in no way a kind of graduation tax. Though they are not paid up front, and though they are linked to income thresholds, they remain an individual debt. There is no sense of sharing and pooling resources that you get in a genuine taxation system. You're buying a pig in a poke if you swallow the line that it's just a kind of graduation tax. The same pig in a poke that a change in pension annuities is trying to sell. Higher education institutions are independent, but not private, with one or two exceptions, I know. For a nation to treat higher education institutions as private entities entitled to trade in students and the money they represent does represent a whoring of principles and is fundamentally dishonest. Higher education institutions feed on a huge public investment in our education system, as indeed Nick Platt has just pointed out, and our young people. They owe a moral duty to the nation to respect that, and it is appropriate that governments back up that moral duty with legal obligations. The target of 50% of young people to go to universities, which drove tuition fees policy in the first place, was and is a cul-de-sac. We should instead look at how we achieve graduate level skills for as many young people as possible, which includes through vocational and apprenticeship training. Any thinking of tuition fees and HE funding post-cap has to take higher level vocational qualifications and the co-funding model being tested in that arena into account. Now, I was an MP at the time that this was introduced and sat indeed on the committee that considered the Higher Education Bill at the time. And that was exactly 10 years ago, January 2004. At the time, I stated several things. I'll give you some of those quotes. The cap will not keep tuition fees down, I said. It will not work. And capping variable fees is rather like trying to be a little bit pregnant. It will grow out of all proportion and all size. The principle has been yielded and the principle will out. In 15 years of politics, I haven't got everything right. This one I did.
Always nice to have a little bit of I told you so in the debate. Nice to hear that Professor David Markham quoted and to see him in the audience with his wife tonight. And also in the audience are the former Education Minister, Jane Davidson, who segues brilliantly into our next speaker, Professor Teresa Rees, because of course it was Jane who pointed Teresa to the two reviews that she led into higher education in Wales, which makes her exceptionally well qualified, as well as her very rich background into research on equality. So Professor Rees is our next speaker.
Can I first of all start by deconstructing the sentence? This is what academics do, of course. When we say, should the cap be lifted on university tuition fees, where exactly? Because, of course, we have a complete mess in the UK. So if you're from Northern Ireland, you want to study here or vice versa. So that would be the first amendment, I think. And I have lots of visitors from various European countries, particularly the Netherlands, professors who are saying, oh, we're stuffed full with your rich British students coming over here. So we should think where we want these fees to be controlled, as it were. And also, any lifting of caps wouldn't apply to the private sector anyway. So that's my first problem with the motion. Secondly, universities, I no longer really know what a university is. They're such a diverse group of institutions with such a range of missions. I remember being told by a vice-chancellor in Wales how sorry he felt for me being at Cardiff University. He said, if I need a new engineering lecture, I just go down and hire a car mechanic who's halfway articulate. I don't have to go across the country to find someone I can return in some ref exercise who's a brilliant researcher as well who wants books in the library. And yet I get paid the same for my lecture as you get paid for yours. So we're very diverse in our structure. Thirdly, tuition fees. Well, obviously it was a great mistake to call them tuition fees in the first place. They should have called them, as the Rees review said, described them, end-loaded income contingent graduate endowment contributions. If they'd only stuck with that, we wouldn't be in half the mess that we're in. But anyway, having got problems with the notion that obviously I'm supporting in a way, it shouldn't be maintenance. It shouldn't be fees that we're talking about. It is maintenance, and I think again the reviewers pointed this over and over again. The fees are, if they are end-loaded and income contingent, then in a sense it's not so much of a problem. The loans that we've been hearing about, which are reaching in some individual cases gargantuan and unreasonable proportions, which we're hearing from student loan company are not going to necessarily all be repaid anyway. If you took out the maintenance loans that people had borrowed from all of that, it would all look very different. And this is the issue. And if we're really expecting students to be able to go to university for free, then I go back to an image we used in the Rees Review. Why are we asking the hospital porter to pay towards the education of the hospital doctor in such a way out of taxes, which means that other things those taxes could go on, like childcare for the hospital porter, cannot be funded? Now, the other issue that we have at the moment is school leavers don't understand bursaries. They don't realise, they don't know what they would be eligible for if they go to universities. The point about lifting the cap on university tuition fees is that you'll have much more money to put into support for the less well-off student, and this is absolutely critical. I'm really impressed by the care leavers in my own university. We've encouraged and supported them a great deal. They've approached our student services and said, we want to mentor children in local schools who are in care in order to tell them, we've done it, you can do it. In fact, there are some finances available for children in care to get through to university. That is life-changing. That's absolutely critical. But if we don't have more fees, then we won't have the resource really to do that properly. One of the things I think we were most pleased about was the Welsh Government supporting the Assembly Learning Grant, which went to young people, people of all ages, in full-time and part-time education, in further education and higher education. We weren't putting all the money just into your bog-standard full-time student. What about everybody else? So who should pay for a university education? Yes, the graduate, when they reach a certain income, should make a contribution. Yes, the state should contribute. But I also think employers, in many cases, should be contributing too, through graduate apprenticeships, through sorts of degree courses that are geared towards particular industries. And I think there's a lot of scope there to develop that. And I think there's also a huge gap between the amount of state money put into graduates at the moment compared with people who are not going to university. What about preschool learning? What about the huge number of children in Welsh schools leaving without any qualifications whatsoever? That's a national disgrace. We should be concerned about them. We should be focusing on them. What about the resource we put into vocational education, both in terms of the state and employers? There's hardly anything for them. Look at other countries, and there's much more support for vocational training linked to employers. So we need higher fees in order to give more support for widening access, to make it realistic. We don't want young people choosing particular degree courses in particular institutions so that they can stay at home and have a cheap version of it. Everybody should be able to be following their own curiosity. I have taught some students who are not particularly curious, who just ended up in university because it was the thing to do, and it's a nightmare. So curiosity must drive what people want to do. And if this capital isn't raised to put into universities to be able to support widening access properly, then all I can say is you should choose your parents carefully. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And finally, to reply is Hannah Pudner, who's the director of the NUS in Wales. Hannah.
Thank you very much, and good evening, everyone. As was mentioned, it is slightly rhetorical, it's a rhetorical cliche to start a discussion by questioning its very premise. But when I'm asked to speak about raising the cap on tuition fees representing NUS, I'm actually left with very little choice. The question makes two key presumptions. Firstly, that the cap should be lifted, not lowered. And secondly, that tuition fees are indeed the best way to get a gradual contribution to the cost of education. But what's even more stark is what this question leaves out. Who this debate is actually talking about. Let's be clear. Postgrads pay tuition fees. Part-time students pay tuition fees. But they're not who this question is referring to. The question presumes we're talking about and therefore only interested in the typical 18 to 21 full-time undergraduate. And it's this kind of thinking that has proved all too problematic in the past. To limit discussion to one particular group of students studying one particular mode is to needlessly limit our conception of higher education in Wales. And this leads us to a situation where postgrads and part-timers are yet again ignored in favour of undergraduates. But before we talk about how the HE system should operate, what it should look like and how it should be funded, surely we should first be clear on what its purpose is and what we want it to achieve. I believe higher education should be about creating a fairer society by improving social mobility and providing social capital. I believe higher education should be about strengthening the economy through localised spending, the provision of research and the creation of spin-off businesses. And I also believe that higher education should be about providing flexible responses to the skills needs of the people in Wales. Talking about a narrow band of students and a narrow form of higher education does not achieve these aims. And what also doesn't achieve these aims is focusing the entire debate around a narrow question of tuition fees, particularly around the cap. Student support and funding, in its totality, is far more than the tuition fee grant and loan. Ultimately, students do not drop out of university because of their fee loan. They drop out of university because they can't afford to live. But I'll come back to that. First, let's answer the question that this debate is framed. Is it time for the tuition fee cap to be lifted? Well, absolutely not. I would say that. Why? For some half-baked idea of competition that has yet to actually materialise, the introduction of 9K fees was meant to create a market, to create competition, to create consumerism. The neoliberal dream, it did not happen. There is no market in education. The average fee in 2013 is a little over 8,500. Three out of four institutions are charging the maximum fee for all or some of their courses. Indeed, the experiment did fail. When it comes to price fixing, supermarkets and the price of milk have nothing on universities. We already have some of the highest tuition fees in the developed world, OECD figures placing us marginally ahead of the US average. And what do we have to show for it? It was recently announced and in the press today that the Westminster government will find that it saved little or no money with a trebling of fees. No saving of public money, but fees trebled. This is outrageous. We should be absolutely outraged. The accounting model used in this situation has been described as akin to the dark arts used by the bankers before the crash. And that wasn't said by my socialist father, that was said by someone from Number 10. So what are our options? Do we turn a blind eye to the omni-shambles in England and move forward determined to make the same mistakes? Scrap the fee grant entirely and watch as we charge students three times as much money but save the public purse very little? Or remove the tuition fee cap entirely just so more students cannot pay even more money? And why? So our universities can get short-term investment of cash regardless of the long-term consequences. This doesn't seem sensible to me. But of course, while Welsh universities can charge 9,000, Welsh students pay less. NUS Wales supports the fee grant, but don't get me wrong, it is in some ways problematic. It's blunt. It doesn't target specific groups and it isn't spent strategically. And it's expensive, possibly unsustainably so. But indeed, the principle is sound. But even if the fee grant were to be removed, the subsidy, or the removal of the subsidy, would be no quick fix to a lack of money in the sector. It would take years for the current students to move through the system. There would be no sudden cash investment. And even if there was spare cash to be made, there's nothing to say that the education sector would reap those benefits. It would not necessarily go into the coffers of HEFCU. Perhaps we need a more nuanced and strategic policy approach. a support system that helps students study inside and outside of Wales, but based on their financial needs and or the availability of courses. This is the policy that was passed by NUS Wales only 2 weeks ago. And while everyone talks about fees and the fee grant, we're ignoring the even more pressing issue, day-to-day living costs. According to NUS Wales's Pound in Your Pocket research, 70% of students are worried about future levels of debt. One third have seriously considered leaving their course due to financial difficulties, and over half regularly worry about meeting basic living expenses. Right now, students in Wales are choosing between a decent meal and a textbook, heating or a field trip, a dentist appointment or equipment. True widening access is more than just getting disadvantaged people into higher education. It's about keeping them there, quite literally staying the course. Now, Higher Education Wales is resilient. It survived and thrived and will continue to do so. But now is the time for us to decide what we truly want from our education system and how we want that to be delivered. We cannot allow postgraduate provision to remain, as the Centre Forum labelled it, an exclusive golf club. We cannot allow the continued part-time provision underfunding that fails to meet the needs of those who rely on it, carers, parents, disabled, those in full-time work. And we must not let our students, regardless of mode or study, spend their education fraught with worry over basic living expenses and debt. And I don't want an education system that is foolishly constructed on the never-never, on money that will never be repaid. So these are the challenges. There are many, budgetary and otherwise. But we must think outside the box. We must look about how we apportion what funding we do have and how we ask our students to contribute, and indeed they should contribute. We need to explore what powers we already have in Wales to radically change our approach to higher education, and what powers we might want to call for so that we can implement the best deal for students, university and for Wales. If the sticker fee price is a barrier, the concept of loans and debt is a barrier, then how do we get around them? Would a graduate tax provide a fairer means for graduate contribution? Quite possibly. It could retain many of the best features of the loan system, income contingent repayments, for example, whilst ensuring the money remained within the funding council to distribute and leave a policy. I'm aware I've only answered one question and posed a lot more, but that's what we need right now, to ask questions. Because we need to construct an education system built to last, not another quick fix, not another jury-rigged system that solves one problem but creates 10 more. I want an education system where the question of this debate wouldn't have been, should we lift the cap, but are we actually and genuinely creating an education system that promotes social justice and is the engine that drives our economy forward?